So there's all these ways people experience music, and it doesn't just have to be through the content, through the audio. It can be through the experience of music. It can be through the watching, going to events, or even using music to help tell your story.
Welcome back to Waves, powered by Arcade, a show for marketers, creators, and entrepreneurs who want to stop chasing the tide and start making waves online. We're your hosts, Mike and Mitzi, and today we're joined by Rebecca Jolly and Joe Belliotti, co-authors of the recently published book, How Music Grows Brands.
Rebecca is a global business consultant focused on innovative brand solutions for startups and international enterprises across the music, publishing, and entertainment industries. She's the founder of music strategy and brand consultancy Sounds Nice, and her work has been featured in Billboard, Entrepreneur, and Music Week.
And Joe is an industry-recognized leader in the music, brand, and technology spaces. During his time as the head of global music at the Coca-Cola Company, he created globally renowned music campaigns and artist partnerships for the company's portfolio of brands. His thought leadership is featured in media like Forbes and Ad Age, and he is currently the SVP of brand strategy for Mayflower Entertainment. Joe and Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for
nice
having us.
Nice to meet you guys.
Of course. Joe, I'm not sure where you are right now, but Rebecca, thanks for joining us in the evening in the UK. We appreciate it.
No worries. Pleasure.
Joe, where are you, by the way?
I am in Los Angeles. Yeah, so it's midday.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you both. This has been a long time coming. Joe, I think we've been chatting between us over a year, since over a year ago. The time has finally come and Rebecca was able to join us as well, which is timely. Let's get into the questions. Maybe you can each take some time to give us the background with your work and your interest in music, and then we can take it from there. Rebecca, do you want to start?
I mean, in my interest in music goes way back from when I was a kid, really, and when I was a teenager. I moved to university in Manchester, which is a city in the UK, which is particularly known for its music scene and the influence it's had on the kind of music across the UK and beyond that. And that's when I really kind of got into it. I used to promote lots of nights and run kind of clubs and things and look after artists up there. And then I moved to London and worked in the agency world, the brand agency world. And it took a kind of a bit of back and forth before those two worlds converged. And since then, I guess almost for 20 years or so now, I've always worked in the music and brand space on both sides of it, either working with brands at creative agencies or brands direct, building their music strategy and music programs, or then working on the music side and helping them figure out their commercial propositions and how to work with brands to help them grow their businesses. So I've worked with companies like SFX Entertainment in New York. I also ran Mixmag and Kerrang, which are both British music titles in the US for about 5 years and grew the businesses across New York and LA and worked with various kind of music companies since, including things like Beatport, a bit of Massive Music with Joe for a while, various others, and some of the biggest brands that are around, like AB InBev, Diageo, Microsoft, all those. So yeah, really just a kind of meeting of those two worlds. And until a couple of months ago, I set up my own consultancy where I'm kind of doing exactly that myself, lots of clients.
Very exciting. Joe, what about you?
Yeah, sort of a similar story. Always loved music. In bands in high school was terrible. Went to Berklee College of Music because I wanted to get into the music business. Moved out to Los Angeles, started out in music publishing, which was interesting, and then got into music for film and TV. Supervising TV shows, soundtracks. And then ad agencies started to call me and asked me to help find music for campaigns. So I got into that, got really interested in that. Moved to New York, started an agency with a friend of mine who managed hip-hop artists. He managed 50 Cent, Diddy, LL Cool J, Busta Rhymes. And we started an agency and went out to brands and helped them connect with pop culture through music. And eventually Coca-Cola became a client of ours. So we started to do all the music work for Coke. And then I joined full-time Coke. I spent 8 years there as the head of music, setting up the partnerships, the strategies, the content programs around all of our campaigns, and traveled the world and found all the interesting ways, you know, we use music to drive the business and connect with audiences in unique ways. And then I left and I started doing consultancy. I spent a couple of years at SongTrader, a music tech company, and now I'm with a company called Mayflower Entertainment. We do music licensing, music booking, celebrity talent, and athletes for brands and agencies.
That's so cool. Joe, I'd love to lean in into the concept of sonic branding a little bit more. For listeners who might not know, can you explain, like, what is sonic branding and how does it support kind of like the marketing work that you've done maybe for like Coca-Cola or other brands?
Yeah, I like to think of it in the same terms as visual, right? When you see Coke, you see a Coke ad and you see the packaging, you know it's Coke. The logos, the colors, everything pops. And what the goal is to try to create that same consistency, that same brand experience through the ears, because every brand is connecting with their consumers through sound. The music you use in your advertising, the music you use in your retail space, whatever you're using to communicate with consumers, there's a sound element, especially on TikTok today, which is a sound on platform, unlike the old social media platforms. So you're using all this sound and music as part of your brand identity. So what we try to do is be strategic and thoughtful about it to make sure you're building consistency. People recognize your brand when they hear it. I think the most sort of familiar thing to people about sonic branding is sort of sonic logos. If you think about I'm Loving It, McDonald's, or the Intel Inside logo, those are sort of the most prominent ways, you know, people think about sonic branding, and it's an important way. But it's also become much more, because if you think about, for example, the electric car space, you know, how do you create the sound of a car that doesn't have a sound? How do you create the user experience on, you know, a refrigerator, a washing machine, all the things that are in your home? So sonic branding is much more expansive than just the logo, but it starts with the logo. It's a very important part. But again, it all comes back to paralleling it to the visual identity.
I don't think we realize as kind of laymen, although I suppose we're not really, but how much sonic branding infiltrates everything we do. I was speaking to someone the other day who, to Joe's point about a car company, they were talking through the fact that, you know, when your wing mirrors go in and out when you park the car, that noise alone has so much consideration. There are like tens of options for car companies to choose from and to get it just right. And I find all that really fascinating. And so much of the work we do is trying to get people to put that sound, music specifically, but also sound consideration first. There was a period where it was always an afterthought, really, and people focus so much on the visual identity and kind of layer in whether it's the music on an ad or a piece of content or the actual sound of the brand itself, layer it in afterwards. And I think that kind of shift and realization, I think lockdown potentially helped that as well. Just that connection to brands and to emotions through sound and music is really important. And that's what we're always kind of trying to push it up the funnel a little bit and make sure brands get that bit right and put priority on that.
Yeah, I feel like both of those things sound really important, no pun intended. Like the sound side of things, like in a car versus music, and like music licensing and stuff like that. I'm curious, because I've never done anything in the industry or held a role in that regard. Like, how do you split it in your mind? Like, do you spend most of your time on music and then like sound is kind of something that gets packaged in, or is it vice versa, or are they equal? Where do they land in a spectrum together for brands?
Yeah, it's interesting because it is new to most brands. And what it doesn't have is sort of a common vernacular, right? Because when I think about music in my mind, I think about sound as well. I think it's all musical, right? But we still tend to sort of talk about music and sound as two different things. To me, they're one and the same, right? It's being strategic and thoughtful around the music, the sounds you create, the brand. It's all part of the brand experience. So, you know, we suffer a little bit because we don't have that common way of talking about it throughout the industry. But again, in my mind, it's one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone uses music in some way. All brands do, in whatever part it is they do in marketing. But sound, the actual sound specific, is not quite as kind of mainstream and widely spread. But yeah, I mean, to my earlier point about how lockdown changed things, just that kind of audio experience in the home, and so many people would have, whether it was podcasts or in lieu of office chatter and office noise, they would have their audio entertainment in the background whilst they were doing their work. And I think that shift in brands and realizing that was the way that they could penetrate the consumer these days, because there was less of that kind of visual experience. They weren't walking past 50 billboards in a day. They weren't being exposed to things in the same way. And I think it really did a lot of good work in demonstrating the importance of that, I guess, audio experience in whatever shape it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think with, you know, COVID and us being home and being more digital consumers, and then the rise of TikTok too. I think you both mentioned that it's been a bit of an afterthought, but I'm seeing a shift, which is why we're so excited to have you on this podcast, that people are starting to pay attention to those things a bit more and starting to be a bit more considerate about it. And I'm curious, what drove you to write this book together? And what are you hoping that this book can help kind of educate or achieve when it comes to how people integrate music and sound?
Yeah. Brands are spending a lot of money in sports, a lot of money in influencer marketing compared to the money they're spending in music. They actually spend 10 times more in sports marketing than they do in music. And I would argue music is as big a passion point as sports. And the reason is, you know, it's probably multiple reasons, but the reason is music is more complicated. It's a little more fragmented. It's newer to brands. They don't have the internal capabilities. Most brands have, you know, multiple people on the sports marketing team and maybe one person on the music team, if any. So, you know, I think there's a huge opportunity for brands to leverage music, the brands that aren't. The brands that are, like Coca-Cola and Vans, are really successful and they're connecting with consumers and they're growing equity and they're, you know, in pop culture in a really unique way. But it comes down to, you know, Rebecca and I were talking and, you know, we started talking about our thought process, what we do when we get a new client, how we walk them through the process, how we start with their business objectives and finding the right things for them to do in the music space. And we started to build a methodology around that, started to build a framework. So we decided to put out, you know, basically as many of the tools and strategies and frameworks and all of the thought processes we go through and just put it out into a book. And, you know, hopefully, you know, brands will take it and use it and, you know, incorporate music more into their marketing mix.
Yeah. Well, we were actually working, I think, on a particularly tricky project together. And as we were working through it and we're just kind of shooting the breeze about how complex compared with when we both started in the industry a couple of decades ago. Sorry, just giving away your age and mine here, Joe. But when we first started working in the industry, it was a lot more linear and a lot easier to understand how to operate in music. You know, there were fewer artists, fewer platforms. You could sponsor someone really easily or do a partnership. And it was just, yeah, it was an easier world. And we were talking about how complex and fragmented it was and how we just wish for people who are coming through the industry there was some kind of resource or guidebook or something to help steer people through now because it's such a complicated world and then thought maybe we should write one, which is why it's actually called How Music Goes Brands, the Field Guide, because we wanted it to be that. We wanted it to be that kind of resource that is so useful for people, whether it's people who are studying in this space and wanting to move into the industry, whether it's brand managers, whether it's anyone in that space, and to hopefully encourage more people to kind of move into it and support the music industry as such a, it's the number one cultural passion point. But to Joe's point, people still default to sports marketing because it's easier to figure out, I think, and the impact is tangible, whereas there's so much more impact to be garnered from getting a music program right. It just takes a minute to figure it out. So yeah, that's why we wanted to put this together and yeah, really kind of frame it as that tool that people can refer to, and hopefully it helps them either build their strategy or get internal stakeholder investment or figure out what's the breadth of what they can do in music.
That makes a lot of sense. I really want to read this book, to be honest. I'll have to after this, but I think it was Joe mentioned earlier how people are more accustomed to music and sound when it comes to TV and film, and less for brands and advertising. Can we dig into that a little bit? Can you draw the comparison a little bit more, what the difference is and where the opportunity is in brand and advertising compared to film and TV? Just frame that out for us.
Yeah, I think they're very similar, right? And I think, you know, when you hear a soundtrack to a movie, it's part of creating the brand of that film. It helps drive the story forward. It helps keep you engaged. Same thing with the TV show. You know, if you go back, you know, years ago, the OC, you know, sort of spawned a whole sort of style of music just based on the curation of the music in the show. And I think a brand is the same way. I mean, the best example, and this is going back a little bit too, is Apple. You know, when they were putting out their new releases and their silhouette commercials, like they were breaking new artists. And I think, you know, whether it's a TV show, a film, or a brand, you have that consistency, you have that sort of that strategy, you have that point of view, you have that, you know, that feeling, that experience you're trying to create through music. And if you, you know, if you're thoughtful and smart and creative about it, it really, you know, it really you know, adds to the whole experience.
When you're talking about this, you know, it's easy to picture how like the OC, like that connection between like music and the brand, and then movies, that makes sense too, and also Coca-Cola and Vans. I'm curious, like when you talk about sonic branding, what kind of company should be looking into this? Is it something that everyone can adopt, or is it something that you really need more like budgets or bigger partnerships or something like that to adopt some of these principles into their overall marketing?
Well, I think every brand can do it in some way, shape, or form, right? You know, McDonald's has been using the same, you know, Sonic logo, the I'm loving it, for 20 years. Intel uses that little mnemonic because they're basically an invisible brand. It's just a chip company. You don't see the chip, right? You've got Taco Bell using their bell sound right now. I hear it in a lot of TikTok ads, right? Where you hear the bell and they excuse people to run to Taco Bell, right? So there's all these different ways brands use sound. And in fact, it doesn't have to be expensive. One of the brands I love is Modelo. They use the same music in all their commercials, like just variations of the same music. They're probably creating a lot of efficiencies through that as well, you know, without having to reinvent the wheel every single time. And they're building equity in, you know, their brand. And every time if you're not watching TV or you're not watching, you know, YouTube, and that's the music comes on, you know, it's Modelo. So I think there's definitely very different ways brands can use it. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, expensive. And I think maybe even the opposite, it can create some efficiencies.
And I think that point ladders back to our point about why we kind of wrote the book in the first place, about how fragmented the music scene is, because, you know, you used to have a brand who would be creating an ad and they would have to have one of the biggest artists make the song for their ad. And it isn't like that these days. You know, you can work with 5 or 10 different emerging artists who are like at the very beginning of their careers to create the most amazing music and sound or jingle or track for your ad or for your content, and get so much more return from that because they work so much harder as well in terms of what they do to help promote your brand once, you know, they're on board with it from the beginning. So I think that kind of notion that to do something like this, you have to go with the absolute biggest agency or the absolute biggest artist is not the case anymore, and people can create something really spectacular from a sound and music perspective for their brands by just being a little creative and find that person on TikTok who you love the music that they've made and kind of get them on board with it to create something for you, and it'll pay kind of dividends, I think, compared with a huge great big artist partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you were saying that, I was thinking about all those like TikTok like artists who are sharing their music. And even like in our line of work, we work with a lot of creators who are, you know, video creators, and they are creating content for brands. But it's almost like that kind of same thing. There's a plethora of different types of musicians and music creators and sound creators out there who are able to do that kind of thing. It's just tapping into that or being thoughtful about it. Or as I think, Rebecca, you said, intentional about it from the get-go could be a really cool experiment. Or I guess like strategy.
Yeah, I was gonna say to that point, I'm glad we're getting a little bit more granular, or maybe granular is not the right word, but it feels like it's getting more approachable as we talk about it more and more. But Rebecca, I wanted to kind of follow up on some of the points that you were making and ask, from your perspective, when it comes to music, is original music the ideal path for brands? Especially when we're thinking about like short form content on TikTok, or even like paid social, like ad creative and stuff like that. And the follow up question to that is, does licensed or like almost like stock music, I don't know what the right term is for it, from platforms like MusicBed or whatever, does that cheapen the brand sound or anything like that?
I don't think so. I think all in any. I think sometimes there can be that huge impact moment when you have either a well-known song or a song that's about to blow up, and your brand has been there at the beginning of it, and you have that. But also, like, I mean, I think you just need the people internally who really understand what they want their brand to be represented by from an audio perspective, who can make those choices with music and sound that really resonate with the brand and the audience. And it doesn't matter, I don't think, depending on what it's used for, whether it's a really well-known track or whether it's something custom, there's always the benefit that if you create something custom. I mean, Joe and I have both worked on projects where we've worked with brands and actually created a track and released a track that's absolutely blown up. I did one with a while ago now with Lucozade, which is an energy drinks company in the UK. I don't know if it's in the US actually, and DJ Fresh, and we created a tune and released it, and it went to the top of the charts in the UK and was there for weeks, and became, it did so much good for, then Lucozade used it through all their marketing, and just did, it was a really kind of well-considered, well-put-together program. And I know Joe's worked on similar. So, I think it has to tie into your overall music strategy and what it is you're trying to achieve. But I think it can, it's not one size fits all. I think everything can work if you kind of put the right consideration to it and understand what you're trying to say as a brand.
That's helpful. I'm curious about the more of the scientific side of all of this. Like when we think about branding and marketing, obviously there's like psychology involved, even when you think about colors and typefaces and things like that. And certain things can be more memorable than others. Is it similar with sound and music, like beyond just aligning with people's music preferences or the sounds that they like? Does it do anything else for a brand or a marketing campaign?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a couple ways to answer that question. So one is, you know, scientifically, like the brain is more active when it's listening. So you're actually retaining more information. You're more attentive, right? And that's definitely a benefit if you're marketing and you're trying to put a message out there. But there's also a lot of research around sounds that are more pleasant to us as human beings, right? White noise is a very pleasant sound. Fingernails on a chalkboard isn't, right? And there's probably a million different sounds within the spectrum of that. And it's funny because if you think about the HBO sound, right, it's basically white noise, right? Very, very pleasant, scores very, very high when it comes to sonic identity. So yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely a consideration. There's definitely an art and science to sound when it comes to brands.
Yeah, there's so much research that's done into things like the kind of music and sound that drives purchase consideration, for example, or that complements a retail experience. I mean, that whole multi-sensory retail experience, music is a huge part of that. I used to work with a company who specializes in creating soundscapes for wellness spaces, for example. I mean, and that's just really, I mean, that's a very kind of one end of the scale example, but shows how the sound is really important. If you got that wrong, that will completely alter your experience. Joe and I, as we've kind of been discussing potentially whether we kind of do a follow-up book, we've been talking a lot about the power of music and how it can really influence things positively in so many ways. And we've gone quite deep into research and all this about how music affects the brain, about how it can be used for healing, how it can be used for people who suffer from Alzheimer's and dementia. And I think all that research and all that work that's gone into that really demonstrates how much music and sound can really alter your experience and ultimately kind of even change how you consider a brand or whether you buy a brand or all those different things.
Yeah, I can totally relate to sounds at like a spa. Like I pay attention to those things because oftentimes your eyes are closed and you're just like more aware of what's going on around you. But even when I'm shopping too, like sometimes if the music is weird, like, I don't know, it just changes the experience.
Yeah, it completely does. And the best kind of, when brands get it right or retailers get it right is when you almost don't really notice it, but you just, you feel it influencing your mood positively. There's a store, probably shouldn't mention the brand, but like a huge big brand on Oxford Circus in London that should be able to get this right. But the music is always so jarring and so loud and so alienating to most people who go in there. I think it's really detrimental to it. And I always really want to get hold of the person who's in charge of it and kind of work with them on how they can actually create a better experience in that way for their customers. So, but yeah, I mean, if they got the music wrong in a spa or if they're playing Spotify and an ad comes on it, that's really going to ruin your experience.
Absolutely. I'm curious, Rebecca, if you have any examples of brands that do this well. Like I know you mentioned that it's easy to spot when they're not doing it well, but I'm curious, even from a digital experience, are there any brands that you think have kind of nailed integrating sound thoughtfully in a way that like really kind of supports their overall brand?
I might need a minute to think about this. I might need to come back to it.
No worries.
I've got so many examples floating around in my head.
It's all good. Or Joe, if you have any that you want to chime into, any examples of brands that are kind of nailing this, the using sound or music into their branding?
Yeah, I think there's actually quite a few. I think, Intel, I mentioned earlier, I think is doing a great job of not only using the sonic identity, but then taking it and creating a whole sort of commercial around it, right? They took that sound and had it reinterpreted by different artists, and it was really, really clever and cool, and they use it as a creative mechanic.
I was talking to somebody the other day who creates the sound for Hewlett-Packard, and they have created what I think, and it's so, I don't think I really realized until they talked me through it, but the sound that even goes into the, or the consideration that goes into the materials of the box, for example, like their whole premise is to try and make it feel like something's about to happen when you open the box. So they do it from a scent point of view, where they have a faintly gunpowdery scent that's meant to feel very exciting, but also the same with the box. When you lift the lid off the box, it's almost they've crafted this sound specifically, like working with material specialists to be able to create this kind of almost like popping noise, like something's about to begin. And I think that when you start to go down that route, it's not music necessarily, but I think that's really smart.
Yeah, I love that. That's super cool.
Yeah, that kind of stuff would just be so fun to like, I feel like that level is a certain type of brand, you know, like they have the ability and the budget to be able to just get scientific about crazy details, like, you know, the ability for you to slide open a box and it make a popping sound. Like that's so, so meticulous.
And then on the other side of the coin, then the much more obvious is, I feel like we're talking about this a bit, Joe, but when a brand just does something that's so obvious and celebratory in music and just pulls something brilliant together that stops people in their tracks and makes everyone feel like joyful. And the best example of that recently was the Moncler show, where they just put together the most incredible lineup with no real reason or purpose, but just like to make a brilliant splash, to have a great event, to have loads of people watching their content and sharing it and just making a really special moment. And it doesn't always have to be complex. You know, it can just be a moment that creates and provokes such a good emotion in people. And that does a lot of work as well, I think.
One thing that I've always noticed, I'm a big NFL fan, and I've been watching football since I was a kid, and I have to assume this is intentional on their part, because I feel like they're just also meticulous about their brand and the overall experience. But I feel like even just when you have football games on the TV, there's a certain like white noise or like background noise of the game and like the audience and just like all the different things that are happening at once that feels like really recognizable over time. And I don't know if either of you have a perspective on if that is intentional as part of the TV broadcast or not. But that's been something that for me, like has stuck with me because I've been watching it since I was a kid. And it almost, I feel like because it's on Sundays, I even feel like it almost, there's this programming inside my mind that like when that I hear that sound, I feel like I should have a nap on the couch or something like that, you know?
You're so right. You know, you just took me completely back to being a kid. And again, this might be a British reference, but there was a TV show called Ski Sunday on a Sunday, obviously about skiing in the UK. And the music is, it just comes back to me immediately. And it brings back all those memories of sitting in the front room, probably eating cheese on toast, like running around in front of the fire, which probably doesn't sound really safe, but those memories and watching Ski Sunday with my family. And it just feels, it's such a visceral memory, like 30 plus years later, you know? And I think that it feels kind of similar to your NFL reference.
Yeah. And to me, that connects so much to what Joe was saying about how your brain is more active when it's listening. Like, I feel like I can feel all the other senses from those memories, like how hot it was and how comfortable I was, and even like certain smells or like the food that you were eating, Rebecca. It's so interesting.
Yeah. Or even the fact that NFL has like their theme song, like on, is it Thursday nights? Like, even because I can't think of another league that does that. And I think they work with Carrie Underwood or something on that. But I just think that's so interesting too. And it's something maybe like now we're paying a bit more attention to. And I'm curious from both of you, there was an era of marketing where jingles really mattered. And then we kind of went away from that. And do you think, we've mentioned jingles a little bit, that it's coming back? Do you think that brands can, or jingles are something that we should start thinking about more intentionally?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it does go in phases. I think Burger King just is crushing it right now with that Whopper jingle all over TikTok, right? And it's really effective. If you call that a jingle, I think it is, right? It's a song about a brand. So yeah, I think if it's done really well, and that was just done so well, and it's so quirky and so funny, I think you run a risk when you start to get, you know, too into the, a lot of insurance companies are using jingles right now. And, you know, some of them work pretty well. Some of them are just actually annoying, right? I mean, it's not something you want to hear over and over and over again. And it actually takes away from the credibility of the brand and the product. So I think it's got to be used, you know, in the right way. But I think, I think the Whopper one is a really good example of a jingle today, but it goes in phases.
Yeah, for sure. I'm down for them to come back, have another moment. I think a lot of our listeners are more, they work with more like the small to medium sized brands. Some of them are freelancers. Some of them are maybe building small agencies. We've heard a lot of examples like Coca-Cola and Intel and McDonald's and the NFL. So I'm wondering if the two of you can help us just kind of frame it more into that like mid-sized brand space, especially for brands that potentially haven't yet truly explored what music or sound could do as an additional piece of their branding. Practical steps for how to get into it, how to explore it, what to think about.
So yeah, I think you raise a really good point. And we've talked a lot about music to amplify content and music as a brand asset and sonic identity. But there's a whole other layer, which is music as a passion point, whether it's artist partnerships or storytelling or sponsorship of events. And I think that's where it gets really interesting, especially for small and medium-sized brands, to do partnerships with local artists, to use their music and content, to give away tickets to shows. You could have one store on a main street and still do a partnership with a local artist. You could be a small brand trying to get exposure, at a festival, you know, by sampling your product. So there's all these ways people experience music, and it doesn't just have to be through the content, through the audio. It can be through the experience of music. It can be through the watching, going to events, or even using music to help tell your story in different ways that is, you know, you can create very, very sort of, you know, shared value relationships with artists or, you know, record labels or the music community to help do that.
Yeah, I think that's where it gets really interesting and really creative, actually. I think you almost have more freedom to be able to play and experiment a little bit when you're a smaller brand. And I think being there, like Joe says, at a like you don't necessarily have to do something like creating music specifically for your brand for a big TV spot. It can, if you think about the kind of audience that you want to connect with through your brand and be there at those moments, like festivals and music events are a perfect example. Like they're always so receptive to brands being involved for very little money if they're adding some kind of value and enhancing the experience of the audience. And I think that can really pay off. And same with working with artists, you know, don't spend all your money on big artists. Like find five tiny artists who are going to be so appreciative of that tiny budget to be able to facilitate their creation of something. And from there, always be kind of endowed in a way to your brand and like grateful that your brand supported them when they're on the way up, and the work that they'll do for you and putting it back in and getting your brand out there to their own audiences is really impactful. And I think that you can be, yeah, you don't need the big budgets these days. I think the democratization of all of this, it makes it a bit more complicated, but just the opportunity that can come from finding amazing artists and slightly undiscovered like grassroots talent is really exciting for a brand.
Yeah, that really helps me connect the dots for like how to just dip your toes in. And I think you also bring some memories to mind for us and some of our content. Like we haven't done anything major, but if I think back to things we share on social as an agency, even some of our most engaging content has been music related. Like one New Year's Eve, we worked with a DJ to create this mixtape of just like what we felt were bangers from TikTok, you know, from that year. And then we've also been doing these like monthly Spotify playlists that are curated by our team. And, you know, some of that, it seems so simple, but to your point, Joe, about music being about passion, people really resonate with certain kinds of music, and especially when brands seem to integrate it.
Well, music is so shareable, and it's also such social currency. And so I think as a brand or a media platform or anything, if you're then sharing music that people can then share beyond that, like it just, they will do. If it strikes a chord with them, they will. They'll share, they'll talk about it, they'll kind of dig in a bit deeper. So yeah, it's another reason that we think that there can be such value from working with music in that way.
Yeah. And we've always done original music for our podcast, and we've experienced that. Like, we didn't work with like a massive artist for that, but the person that we did engage was super keen, and they went the extra mile and they over delivered beyond what we asked for initially. And that was such a positive experience for us. So, and then of course the ability to have a track that's like that unique to the experience that you're creating, and not just something you found on a platform that's as close as you can, as you can get. That's been a good experience for us and something that has been memorable for our listeners. So it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting to the end of our interview here, and we like to ask all of our guests this question. So I'm going to let you both take turns here, but who is making waves right now and why? And this could be, you know, we've talked a lot about brand examples, but it could also be, you know, a musician that you're really excited about, or anyone that you're really just paying attention to and excited about what they're doing.
I'm always interested in brands and artists who are doing something more, like their ambition is to create some kind of further reaching impact or influence in some way. And there's a really great kind of music and brand partnership and initiative at the moment that I absolutely love. It's with the headphone brand III. And they have really are putting their weight and investment behind diversity in the music industry. And they've built and created a music studio in London, which is for underrepresented artists specifically. And the music that's coming out of that Sherelle is a DJ who I absolutely love, who's amazing. She's really heavily involved in it. And they're just building this space that's a safe space for music creation. But actually then kind of they put out so much amazing music that is obviously then kind of affiliated with the brand. But the whole positioning of what they're doing is just doing all this work to be able to create that, really kind of puts a weight behind a more equally represented, diverse music space, which is what we are always looking for. So yeah, I would call them out as an example of a kind of brand music partnership initiative that's really making waves. I think it's amazing to see things like that, and I'm always very supportive of it.
Love it. How about you, Jill?
So I'm going to call out a friend of mine named Kathy Applefolk Olson, who started Hollywood in Mind. It's a new initiative, which is bringing together the Hollywood entertainment community with the health and wellness community. And she hosted her first summit a few weeks ago at the UTA offices in Beverly Hills. And she had companies from MTV to Publicis Health to Google, Roblox, together with Demi Lovato, Master P, people from all different, you know, facets of the entertainment industry. And the goal was to bring them together with health and wellness experts to figure out how you can use the power of entertainment to not only break down the stigma around mental health and well-being, but also to provide the tools to people to be able to go out there and create better work environments, use, you know, celebrity and exposure to help, you know, fans that might be, you know, struggling with mental health issues. I mean, there's so many things happening in the space to address this. It is definitely a global crisis. But what she's doing is, you know, one thing that I think is just, you know, worthy of some attention and support.
Fantastic examples. While we're on the topic of making waves right now, obviously AI is having a big moment. Really, moment isn't the right way to describe it, because I think it's going to be part of our reality moving forward. But we see a lot of examples with AI in other mediums, like writing copy and even like creating an image out of nothing or designing something. But I'm curious if either of you have examples of tools or platforms or use cases for AI in the world of sound and music for brands or just in general.
So let's put aside the fact that it's going to destroy humanity and the legal implications. I'm just kidding. Who knows? But there's legal implications. I'm going to focus on the positive. So technology and music, think back to the 1980s when this thing called the TR-808 drum machine came out. It basically created an entire genre of music in hip hop, right? It had those classic sort of beats and it became the foundation for hip hop music. And I'm sure at the time people were saying, oh, it's going to put drummers out of business, right? But what it did is it gave people a way to express themselves and create something through this new technology. So I'm going to parallel that to AI. I'm going to look at AI as a technology that's going to help people express themselves in different ways. So just because I can't strum a guitar or I can't hit a drum or I can't do certain things, you know, physically around music, doesn't mean I don't have something to say and I can't use this technology to help express that. So I think AI could actually be a really, really positive tool in helping, you know, just further music. You know, I don't think it's going to degrade music. I think there are going to be instances where AI is going to create this copycat music and it's going to be like, you know, wallpaper or, you know, whatever art you buy in the, you know, in the art section of Target, right? Which isn't really, you know, created art. It's just whatever, you know, Target decides to sell. But I think there's going to be that element to it. But I also think there's going to be a lot of creativity that happens because of AI, because of its existence.
Love to hear it.
Awesome. I would love to see a tool, like an AI tool that you can give it a bunch of parameters and it'll help you like really hone in on some specific tracks on one of those like vast platforms that really align with what you're looking for, or even better, curates like a few specific artists or composers or something like that that produce the kind of sound that you're looking for to align with your brand. I think that would be such a cool opportunity.
That's cool.
One thing we want to make sure we know before you go is one, where listeners can connect with you after this, and of course, where can they get your book?
Yeah, the book is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and really everywhere books are online. And I'm Joe at howmusicgrowsbrands.com and Rebecca is Rebecca at howmusicgrowsbrands.com and of course, LinkedIn and all those other platforms out there.
And Instagram also. Yeah. A quick Google.
What's your handle on Instagram, Rebecca?
Mine is, I probably should change it. Mine is Jolly, J-O-L-L-Y, 81-N-Y.
Nice.
Not very catchy.
Joe, you don't have to share your Instagram if you don't want to. LinkedIn.
It's Joe Belliotti.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you both for your time. I'm excited to get into this book. I think you really wet the palate for this one and really got our wheels turning on what is possible when it comes to sound and music for brands.
Thanks. Appreciate you having us.
It was lovely to chat with you both.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Waves. If you enjoyed this episode, you can hit subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. And don't forget to follow along on social at Hello Arcade. We'll see you next time.